Golf Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Tourism Ireland. Ireland is open and ready to welcome you back. World-class courses, celebrated links, spectacular scenery, rich culture, and the warmest of welcomes await. Now is the time to get back to the things that matter most. Now is the time for Ireland. Press the green button and start planning at ireland.com/golf. And by iBeCool Athleisure Wear for men and women. Technology meets fashion with iBeCool, stylish UPF 50 plus sun protection, and IceFill technology to cool your body temperature on hot and humid days. Look great and protect your skin. iBKUL.com. And by Johnny O. East Coast traditional meets West Coast casual. The best of both worlds apparel for men and boys. Visit www.johnny-o.com to learn more. Welcome back to Talking Golf with Anne Liguori. And my guest is Padraig Harrington, winner of three major titles, recently won the U.S. Senior Open Championship. And boy, Padraig, with your recent U.S. Senior Open win and many runner-up finishes, including one at the Senior Open Championship in Scotland, I would say you're playing excellent golf of late.
Yeah, no, but golf's been pretty good. It's nice on the Champions Tour to be in contention rather than, you know, on the regular tour. I'm on that cut line a little too often. I feel under pressure on the regular tour to have my very best game, whereas on the Champions Tour, I kind of have a good feeling that I'm going to be in contention. And often when you feel like that, you relax a little bit and you play better.
Yeah, well, you're really playing well. And by the way, I've always enjoyed the lessons that you've been giving just on video via Twitter. I just think you're a very good golf instructor as well.
Yeah, I like coaching. I'm a little bit of a contrarian, so I like telling people things that they were doing wrong or didn't know. So while I did put them all out on Twitter and Instagram during the COVID years, hopefully I can say the COVID years is a past thing. I know it's still around, but they're all on YouTube now. So I put longer versions out on YouTube every 2 weeks.
Well, that's good to know, because I really learn a lot from your instruction pieces. But anyway, I know you were a member of six straight Ryder Cup teams between 1999 and 2010. You captained the 2021 European Ryder Cup team at Whistling Straits last year. I've covered every Ryder Cup since, gosh, Brookline. And obviously Team Europe is experiencing quite a bit of turmoil of late with Henrik Stenson exiting to LIV Golf. Just want to get your overall thoughts about that, Padraig.
Yeah, you know, it's disappointing that Henrik didn't wait around his 15 months to captain the team. When he was selected, he had to agree certain terms, and, you know, he may believe that he could do both jobs, but nobody in the real world thinks he could be at LIV and be the Ryder Cup captain. I don't know why he's trying to posture that position out there. It's pretty clear if you want to go play LIV, great, no problem, do that. The money is great. It looks like it's going to be there, here to stay. Fine, but, you know, don't try and make us all out to be fools. If you're there, you can't be here. That's just the way it is. You can't be the Ryder Cup captain and be on the LIV Tour at this moment. That's not saying that won't be the same in 10 years' time. We don't know where it's going to be. But right now, at this moment, there is quite a separation, and there was contracts in place, and nobody is fooled by, well, I thought I could do both. There's nobody who's thinking that.
So basically what he did was hold out for more money from LIV Golf, I think.
No, I don't think so. I don't have a problem with him going. And Henrik was one of the closest people. He lived in the Middle East. He was very close to this LIV Golf and the Saudi Golf all along. He would have played there for many years. So would personally know the Saudi Arabian side of this. So, you know, he would have been the closest to them, I think. And so he was first choice to go to LIV, but he made a choice when the LIV Tour was in doubt. He took the choice of going with the Ryder Cup. And now that the LIV Tour is not in doubt, he switched sides. You know, I don't have any, he would have been the first name on the list. I have no problem. I don't think he would have got a better contract being the Ryder Cup captain. I think he had a very, very, very good contract in place which would have been negotiated 2-3 years ago when he was not far off winning the Open at the top of the game. So I have, you know, I do not think he used that as a negotiating tool. I do believe, though, that he was having his cake and trying to eat it, as in he took the Ryder Cup position because Liv, what looked like that, you know, 9 months ago, Liv didn't look like it was going to happen. Certainly there was a risk. 9 months down the line, anybody joining now the Liv Tour, you know, and I kind of hear them saying it now, there is very little risk for those players joining. Whereas the guys who jumped first, there was a lot of risk. You know, was it going to fully go ahead? Would it keep going? Would they get banned? Would they be able to play majors? I know some of those are up in the air, but as we go further and further, nobody in Europe got banned this year. Nobody in Europe couldn't play the majors. So there's less risk to any of those players who have decided to join another tour. And it looks like, you know, the Live Tour is going to be normal in pretty soon. It's 15 events of the year, and it looks like it's going to be part of the schedule. As long as they're committed, it's going to be here to stay.
I know you have said you had no problem with players jumping to Live Golf for the money, but what are your thoughts about where the money is coming from? Do you have an issue with that?
Yeah, you know, where the money coming from was the first, you know, PGL were the ones who started this off, and they had Live Golf, they had the Saudi Arabia Investment Fund as a backer, and it was their idea was swatted away by the money. They says, "Oh, look, your money's coming from Saudi Arabia. That's not good money." And if anything, that emboldened Saudi Arabia to say, "Hey, you don't want our money, we're going to do this ourselves." Now we're down this road a year and a half, and the first year was, "Oh, it's the money. Well, I have to tell you, everybody has different moral standards, you know, and that's the truth of it. Like, I guarantee you there's players going to the Live Tournament from countries that they're being applauded going. There's no second guessing in their country. So, you know, the standards we all set ourselves to live by in different states, everybody has a personal standard they have to work on. And we're fools if we start thinking we can apply our standards to other people, because we're all different. And, you know, so trying to knock them back by saying, "Oh, your money isn't good," when, as Rory said the other day, their money is everywhere. It's in every bit of sport out there. You know, it's all around the place. So it was the... I'm basically saying the tour need to tackle this, and which they are doing. The two tours have now turned a totally different tact. You don't hear them talking about the money anymore. They're talking about legacy of the tournaments, and they've gone down a different road, because you do have to understand everybody thinks different, you know, and has a different way of working on these things. And, you know, it is easy if you want to go, you can find lots of logical reasons to go, in the sense of their money is everywhere, their investments are everywhere. And again, it's a bit harsh on Liv to say that the investment fund is they're doing this because of PGL sold them an idea that this could be profitable. Everything the investment fund puts into, like, if it was only interested in the sports washing side of it, all 15 events would be in Saudi Arabia. Come to Saudi Arabia, what a beautiful country, that sort of thing, as we see all around. But the fact is, the events are all around the world, which, when that event this week in Bedminster is run, they're not really thinking about Saudi Arabia this week, they're thinking about the Live Tournament. So it's more that they are trying to, they've certainly been sold the idea that this is a profit-making opportunity by PGL, the original guys who did this. And remember, there was a number of investment funds that were backing this. They thought they could make a profit out of running a team event for 15 weeks. I know the PGA Tour had a look at it and said there's no way their figures stack up. But as I said, some of these investment funds who have been involved, not talking the Saudi Arabian investment fund, was it Rain Capital and them, they've been successful in other business ventures in sports. So they thought there was a way of making money out of this. It's up in the air, and there's a lot of, my only problem, I'm sitting in the middle, I'm not, you know, okay, I am a PGA Tour player, but I'm not inside that 125, so I get nothing of any of the increase in golf, doesn't come to me, I'm outside that, and I'm not on Live, so I'm kind of sitting in the middle, and I see both sides only telling their own story, where they they need to, everybody needs to know all the facts, make their own judgments on that, and you know, go from there. Because, like, I know I don't want to talk necessarily all about Liv, but if we were talking legacy golf tournaments, where's the Australian Open, the South African Open, the Japanese Open, and probably the BMW PGA Championship? They are the legacy tournaments of golf, and they are getting hammered with the reduction in world ranking points. Nobody from outside Australia is going to want to play the Australian Open. Nobody from outside South Africa is going to want to play South African Open. Nobody's traveling to play the Japanese Open. These are the legacy tournaments in golf. So, you know, if we want a legacy, and the BMW PGA reducing the world ranking points for these events, because they used to get capped world ranking points no matter what, you know, that's not helping legacy around the world. So, you know, everybody's throwing things out there, and they're only telling half truths all the time.
Interesting. You bring up a lot of great, great points. I guess let me just, you know, get direct with you and then we'll move on. If LIV Golf approached you, would you go?
I have been approached, so I'm not there. I got the general stuff. I had no specific stuff. And to be honest, I didn't negotiate because I didn't want to be tempted. Because unfortunately, you know, you and we've seen this with players. You put figures on the table, and all of a sudden, you know, whatever way you were, I didn't want to know my price either. I tell you, actually, one of the worst parts of it, and I'm going to be honest here, and I'm telling you, and I've told nobody else, a player came up to me who was there and said, why don't you join my team? And I looked at him and says, I just about let you play on my team. I ain't playing for your team. As in, I have my own, in my own head, I know where I stand in world golf. I can't go in and play under somebody else. And he wasn't an Irish player who said it to me. So it wasn't GMAC or anything like that. But and he wasn't offering, it wasn't a formal offer or anything like that. It was a joking offer. But as I looked at it and says, no, I'm the captain, not the, you know, and that's an issue. That's why I couldn't go. I'm not saying that's another point. I can't go. In my head, I'm the leader. I'm the guy who won the majors. I'm the best player. And look, it doesn't matter if I'm not the best player, I believe I am. And that's, you know, I have to keep telling myself. So in some ways, I'm not signing up. I don't want to sign up to be number four in a team. You know, that's just the way it is. There's many reasons why you can be in or out of the LIV tournament. There was a lot of criticism, say, of Brooks at the US Open, point blankly saying on the Thursday that he wasn't thinking about it. And then when he went on the Monday after the US Open, people were saying, well, that was duplicitous, or well, actually, it wasn't duplicitous, because I don't think it was the Rory one, or maybe it was. Anyway, there was a lot of criticism, and he came out and says, well, they made an offer on the Monday that changed my mind. And let's face it, there's a lot of players that, you know, they have the power and the ability when it comes to actually moving the needle with players, that there could be a player could be sitting there, you know, fully committed to not going, and then all of a sudden, you know, what if they turned around to every major winner and turned around and says, well, whatever you were worth before the major, now we're going to put $100 million on top of that for you winning that major if you join. That's, you know, that has to turn heads. And as I said, when you see that there's already 47 guys who have gone there and it's getting normal, being the 48th guy, is that such a big deal? You know, and again, going back to that moral side with the money, you know, that money is just about everywhere in all parts of sports. I know my country does a lot of business with Saudi Arabia. So, you know, there's tax dollars and everything coming from that. So what, you know, it can be justified if it's a big enough offer.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about how one justifies it. Personally, you know, yes, the United States buys oil from Saudi Arabia, but I don't feel like we as individuals have that much input with that. But as a player, you each have, you know, your own input into, yes, I'm going to take this money, or no, I'm not going to take this money. And nine times out of 10, the guys are going to take the money.
But everybody has individual responsibility. you know, that's just it. You don't have to buy the oil. You don't have to put it in your car if you don't want to. You groupthink is a horrible thing. We've got, you know, and that's, you know, individually we got to get out there and meet people from different points of view, different lives, and you know, we get, you'd be amazed how nice people are who really do think different than you.
Absolutely. No, the whole world thinks differently on so many different issues. And unfortunately, it really has become a political issue, which is a whole other story. Well, let's move on. And I understand, Padraig, you've joined the many athletes who actually take I Promise Visual Edge Pro supplements. I'm interested in learning how that has helped your vision on the golf course and other things you're doing to maintain your level of fitness and competitive nature.
Well, there's two parts to this. I actually sought out I Promise. They didn't come to me. Essentially, I've had 4 laser surgeries. So I'm always very keen in my eyesight. But, you know, the side effect of laser surgeries, your eyes get a little drier. I haven't really, I can't say my side effects are that bad, but they get a little drier. So as I got older, the two things I'm worried about my eye health, and I'm worried about the function of my eyes during tournament play. How well I read the greens, I'm a little bit obsessive about that. I think most golfers would be. And how well I see is another part to it. So, you know, everything I can do, taking the right, I'd be pretty healthy in my diet, but I just wanted to make sure I was getting the right vitamins, the right nutrients for my eyes. And this just summed it up perfect. It's a little packet you take every day that is covered. And to be honest, that packet, and I take 2 cholesterol tablets, not statins now, they're plant-based stenols, they're tablets. They're the only things I take. So I'm pretty good that I'm not a great person for wanting to take all these tablets and different things, but looking after my eyes, and it's very simple. It's a little package, take it every day. That covers that. You've got enough of each. I can't even pronounce some of the words, enough of the different nutrients for your eyes. That's it. You're comfortable. You're more confident, to be honest.
Right.
You know, I think I see better. But like, and to be honest, they tested it and I do see better, you know, but let's say in the real world, it's given me confidence to believe I think better because I've seen the results of the tests and yes, my eyes are functioning better. They're working better. But anecdotally, I'd say, yeah, I think I see better on the golf course. I think I read the greens better. I think I have less dry eyes and things like that. You know, I'm not even sure if these could be placebo effects of it, but I'm confident in that end of it. It's nice that it is backed up by the actual results that they've shown me, that we've done the testing, that the eyes are functioning better with them.
What is the key to your success now in this part of your golf competitive life? Because I feel like you're playing, as you look as strong as ever, mentally you're sharp. What do you think is the key to, you know, prolonging a very successful pro golf career?
Okay. People, yeah, just because we're on this frame of talking earlier in the show, believe it or not, it's the money that came into the sport. So I've had a physio full time for 20 something years, full time with me at tournaments, my own physio working every day. I've had a trainer all that time. You know, I've access to the best people. We have access to health screening. Even, that's what I do individually, but the tours have the health screening, they have the physios. Because of the bigger money in the game, we've been able to afford better travel, better treatment, better people around us, which extends the life of the game. When I started the game, pros didn't make it to 35 years of age. You know, I turned pro at 24, and I thought by my early 30s, I'd be taking a country club job. That was my goal. But because of the money and, you know, obviously Tiger set it off going, that influx of money meant we could all afford, you know, at the height of my career, I probably shouldn't say this environmentally, but I had a plane. I don't have it now, you know, and things like that mean you can less stress in the body. You can travel more. You can do more things. Yeah. So it's a lot of that has helped. Plus, like I would have burnt out in the game in 2015. You know, I found it very hard. I was playing, but it was just hard work. And then I looked at it and said, look, I tried a bit of commentating. I like that. I tried a bit of coaching. I like that. But then I sat down at a period of time. I don't know if I did it overnight, but realized that I actually loved playing golf. So why was I not enjoying being out on tour? And I looked at it and I was, you know, essentially trying too hard. Now I make a much bigger effort to enjoy myself. 20 years ago, if one of the lads said to me, we're going for dinner at 8 o'clock, I might go, ah, it doesn't suit me. I want to be in, you know, got to go to the gym, or I've got to do this, or I've got to do that. Now I go to dinner at 8 o'clock. I'll change my plans in order to have a better social interaction at an event and enjoy myself more around the event than I would have 20 years ago. It's more about enjoying that. I practice a lot, but I practice less than I used to. That helps. I'm just trying to be out there and have fun.
So you're having fun. That's the key. And it takes less pressure and expectation off of you, I'm sure.
If your listeners, I often say this, I'm talking in a corporate setting. There's loads of business people out there who have hit that wall, who have burnt out, and they're thinking of retiring. And they're thinking of retiring and trying something else. And they'll never be as good at something else because it takes years. They're better off looking at what they're doing and finding out what they like about what they do and getting rid of the stuff they don't like doing. So, you know, if there's parts of the job that they hate, well, get somebody else to do the job. If they've got that far in life that they can make those choices. Retirement is a terrible thing. You get old when you retire. So just keep working, but only work on the stuff you like doing.
Follow your passion is huge. That's great advice, Padre. So you don't want to be Ryder Cup captain again?
It's a one and done sort of situation, isn't it? It's an incredible honor to become Ryder Cup captain. I had my run at it. It's really disappointing that I lost. Unfortunately, that's always going to be there. Thankfully, I know from the feedback from my players, and this wouldn't necessarily be the feedback from outside world, you know, it's half and half. People will come up and tell you did a great job, and then somebody else says, oh, it was a terrible. They have no idea what went, you know, what really goes on. So the feedback from my team was very good. And you know, that's all I can, I take a lot of comfort in that side of things, that my team were happy with the job I did for them, very happy with the job I did for them. Everybody in my team. And, you know, I can only take comfort from that. Obviously, I can't take comfort from the score. And I laugh. So, you know, I've never read anything written about me since I'm 18 years of age. I don't listen back to anything. I let it, when I say it, I let it out there. I don't want to hear the comments back, because in the end of the day, it's right to comment. Everybody does it. If I'm watching a football match, I'm giving out about somebody or talking. But I don't really know what's going on, do I? I don't have the full facts, but it's life. It's normal life to do that. But the best thing for me is obviously not engage with, you know, I can't argue my case with somebody who doesn't know the facts.
So who would you like to see as the new captain for the 2023 Ryder Cup?
I am part of the selection committee. So it would be wrong of me to get involved in that side of the conversation at this stage.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on. I could talk to you all morning, but continued success. And I've always been a big fan. Padraig Harrington, thanks so much for coming on Talking Golf.
Thanks, Anne.
Golf Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you by Tourism Ireland. Ireland is open and ready to welcome you back. World-class courses, celebrated links, spectacular scenery, rich culture, and the warmest of welcomes await. Now is the time to get back to the things that matter most. Now is the time for Ireland. Press the green button and start planning at ireland.com/golf. And by iBeCool Athleisure Wear for men and women. Technology meets fashion with iBeCool. Stylish UPF 50 plus sun protection and ice field technology to cool your body temperature on hot and humid days. Look great and protect your skin. iBKUL.com. And by Johnny O. East Coast traditional meets West Coast casual. The best of both worlds apparel for men and boys. Visit www.johnny-o.com to learn more.